the extent there's overlap in testimony.
The court can take judicial notice of that testimony. The request is made based upon our need to procure additional evidence.
Your Honor, may I ask, Ms. Hogan, could you just try to speak close to the speaker? I have a little trouble hearing her.
Okay, no problem, just speak.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, we have a motion to suppress and a motion regarding extended seizure time. Go ahead, Mr. Harold.
Your Honor, before we proceed, does defense intend to call other witnesses besides the defendant?
For this hearing, we are not intending to call anyone aside from the defendant.
So they don't have to be recused. I would make a motion to recuse if they would like to be testifying at this hearing.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what Mr. Harold.
A motion to recuse or to sequester?
Sequester, sorry. Sequester, sorry.
All right. Do you have any other, are there more than this officer testifying today?
No.
Other than perhaps client, but any other witnesses that we need for today, Ms. Oldman?
No.
Okay, so they could actually be excused if they want.
Right.
All right.
Okay.
That's up to them.
Yeah.
Okay.
I call Officer Bunton.
Come on up, Ms. Oldman.
State your name.
Caleb Punzel, P-U-N-Z-E-L.
Closer. You're going to have to get closer to that microphone, okay? Thank you.
Where do you reside?
With the Monaco Police Department, Oneida County.
Where do you reside?
I live in Arborvita. Okay.
What is your occupation?
Police Department, School Resource Officer, currently with the Monaco Police Department.
How long have you been so employed?
June of 2018, I started with the police department.
Officer, could you describe briefly your training and experience as a police officer?
Training and experience would be a drug recognition expert. I'm currently employed in the school at Lakeland Union High School. I've also got training in detecting drug impairment on motor vehicle operators. I investigate state and local crimes, as well as federal crimes that occur in the township.
Prior to your employment at the Monaco Police Department, were you employed in an occupation involving law enforcement?
Yes, I was. I worked for the Forest County Sheriff's Department for a few years prior to that as well.
How many years?
I believe it was 2.5 years.
Did you receive training in the field of law enforcement?
Yes, I did.
What was that training?
Went through the Wisconsin Police Academy in 2015 in Madison, Wisconsin.
How long did that training last?
520 hours.
In the course of that training, did you have training in dealing with the offense of operating while intoxicated?
Yes, sir.
What was that training consist of?
Training consisted of controlled drinkers that would come into the classroom. We perform standardized field sobriety testing on a multitude of anybody from no alcohol impairment at all to what is exhibited as a 0.08 impairment on that individual.
Okay. Officer, did you have occasion to be on duty on June 11, 2020 in the town of Managua?
Yes, I was.
At that point, at 12:53 a.m. that morning, where were you located?
I was in my squad car traveling westbound on Highway 70 near Crest Oil at the intersection of Highway 70 and Morgan Drive.
At that time and place, did you receive a dispatch directing you to go to investigate something?
Yes, we had a call come into the Macro Police Department, which geolocates on our squad computer screen. They dropped a pin at an address at the intersection of Pine Lake Road and Boot Jack Lake Road. That's where the pin dropped. I was unsure what the call was at that time. So it was a 911 open line.
So at that point in time, did you begin traveling to the site?
Yes, sir, I did.
Approximately, what is the distance to the intersection of Blue Jack and what is the other road?
Pine Lake Road.
What is the distance?
I would have to estimate the distance of roughly 15 miles.
Officer, describe the road you traveled on.
They were blacktop, fairly level. The weather was dry, and it was not illuminated other than my squad car lights.
What highways did you travel on to get to the site?
Highway 70 to Squirrel Lake Road, which then turns into Pine Lake Road as you continue south.
Are those all town roads or state highways?
State Highway 70 is a state highway. Squirrel Lake Road and Pine Lake Road are both town operated roadways.
Describe Pine Lake Road.
Pine Lake Road is approximately 35 mile an hour road, if not slower. It's a series of 90 degree left hand and right hand turns, very windy, weaving in through the woods to our southwest corridor of the township.
And as you were traveling to the intersection of Blue Jack and Pine Lake, did you encounter a vehicle?
Yes, as I was getting close to the location of Boot Jack Lake Road at the intersection of Pine Lake Road, I was coming around the left-hand corner at the posted speed limit, and a truck was stopped in the middle of the roadway, not moving.
Was that a 2015 Chevrolet, green Chevrolet truck?
Yes, it was.
The license plate Z129233?
That is correct.
And did you later learn who the owner of that vehicle was?
Yes, I did.
Who was that?
That was James Koski.
Is Mr. Koski in court sitting at council table today?
Yes, sir.
And you recognize him as being the person that you met that night?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Koski is on his license a resident of Newlenox, Illinois?
Yes.
Upon encountering the vehicle on the road, what did you do?
At that time when I came across the vehicle, I didn't know why they were there. So I advised the driver to pull his vehicle to the side of the road. The operator backed his truck off the side of the roadway with his rear tires pointed toward the ditch. He was the sole occupant in the vehicle, at which time I made contact with him as we were getting close to proximity of where I was destined to go to.
When you first came up to the vehicle, was the vehicle that he was operating running?
Yes, the vehicle was running in the middle of the roadway. Lights were on. There's a loud diesel truck. He was the only occupant in the driver's seat.
Could you tell what type of an engine was in the truck?
Yeah, I'm very familiar with vehicles, and it was a 6.6 liter Duramax. Quarter-ton chassis Chevrolet truck.
Does such a truck, in your opinion, create a loud noise when it's running?
Your Honor, I object. I don't understand the point of this question.
Where are we going with that?
We're going with some justification for what the officer did a couple minutes later.
Okay. I'll allow the question.
Yes, my prior knowledge about diesel trucks is they have restrictors on their exhaust in order to make them more quiet. This truck truck at this time did not have that restrictor on, and it was extremely loud as it was running in its idle position.
So after the, as I understand, the operator was directed to move the vehicle to a safe location off of the roadway?
That's correct.
What did you do with your vehicle?
I put my vehicle in reverse and backed up, still parked in the roadway as we were on a corner, so then if somebody did come around southbound on Pine Lake Road, they would see the lights and slow down. They would see my vehicle lights and slow down.
When you first arrived at the site, did you speak to the defendant?
I did make contact with the operator of the vehicle.
What did you say?
I advised who I was and asked if this individual was involved in an incident that was occurring or potentially occurred at the intersection of Pine Lake Road and Blue Jack Lake Road.
When the operator drove his car off to the side of the road, describe how he parked it.
His passenger side tires were off the roadway. The rear tailgate area of his truck was backed down, I guess, more at an angle than parallel to the roadway, with his rear end being partially in the ditch.
What did you do next, officer?
As I was speaking with him, I could smell the odor of intoxicants emitting from his vehicle. I requested that he exit the vehicle at this time. As he exited the vehicle, I noticed he was very uncoordinated, left his door open. I asked him to stand near the rear quarter panel of his vehicle on the driver's side, at which time I turned his truck off and set the keys on the dash.
And why did you turn the truck off?
One, I had reasonable suspicion to believe that he was potentially impaired based on the odor of intoxicants. Him exiting the vehicle, I had impairment clues. And second of all, as I described earlier, the truck was very loud and I could not hear the conversation between us. It was tough to understand, so I turned the vehicle off a little bit.
Describe how the defendant appeared that night.
The defendant was wearing, I believe, blue jeans, a brownish colored top. He had a dark pair of sunglasses on.
What was the level of sunlight in the area at 1 o'clock that morning?
Zero. There was no sunlight at that time.
Did you listen to the defendant speak to you that evening?
Yes, I did.
How would you describe his speech?
Thick, slow, and slurred, consistent with somebody that was under the influence of alcohol or impaired by a drug at that time.
What do you base that on?
My training and experience detecting impaired drivers, as well as my recognition as being an expert witness in court as a drug recognition expert.
I'm talking about subjectively, what did you observe about the way in which the defendant spoke that evening?
It was very slow. He repeated himself many times. Seemed to not be able to unable to comprehend the questions in which I had, which is why I had to repeat myself. His responses were delayed.
Officer, I believe your testimony was that the first call came in at 12:56. And so approximately what time did you get to the scene where you encountered the defendant?
At 1:14 a.m. I arrived on scene, I believe, was when I had contact when I first observed the vehicle on the roadway.
At that time, did the operator, James Pukowski, identify himself?
Yes, he did.
Did you engage in conversation with him at that time?
Yes, I did.
Can you recall any statements that he made about what was going on that night?
I could hear James Pukowski was on the phone via what I believe was OnStar with the Monaco Police Department dispatcher, Ms. Weber, advising him, asking him what was going on. He said things were very weird. He reiterated that dozens of times throughout our contact, that things were weird. So I asked him what was going on, and never once got a clear definitive answer of what was weird. He just continued, and I tried to gain information of what was weird was going on from Mr. Koski.
Did you ask him about whether he had consumed any alcoholic beverages?
I asked if he was drinking this evening, and he admitted that he was drinking, and he got drunk today. He had some alcoholic drinks.
Did he say we were all pretty drunk?
Yes, he did.
Approximately how many times did Mr. Koski refer to the activities back at this house as being weird?
I guess I don't have an exact number, but my guess is more than 10, dozen plus.
Was Mr. Koski using any profane language in addition to describing the circumstances as weird?
He did use profanity in his conversation at times.
I believe he
said the words, "This is fucking weird." The situation was fucking weird.
Did he tell you why he had left the site?
I do not believe so.
Did he describe the conversation with the owner of the property?
I believe he stated that there was an issue between he and the owner of the property, but did not believe what that issue was. He just said the guy was very weird. Again, as I reiterated, that was the main conversational piece from Mr. Koski that night.
Did he say to you that evening that the owner told him to, quote, get off his property, close quote?
Yes.
Did he offer any reason about what he was concerned about?
He did not.
What?
So, during this period of time, when you were observing him, had you made a decision as to whether or not you had sufficient evidence to constitute a reasonable suspicion?
Yes, I did.
What was your intent to do after that point in time?
Based on the totality of information I had to that point and the clues I collected for impairment, I believe that I was, or I didn't believe I was going to ask Mr. Koski if he would consent to standardized field sobriety testing, which would be consistent with my training.
What clues did you rely on in making that decision?
One would be the admission of drinking. Second would be the odor of intoxicants that I observed throughout the contact. Also, he had a gait ataxia when he left his vehicle. He was unsteady on his feet. He was wearing sunglasses at night, which is not consistent with somebody at that time of night. It's tough to see. In addition to that, just general indicators. It appeared based on when a light would go in his eyes, he had a slow reaction to that light.
So,
wait a minute.
What light are you talking about?
Vehicle lights.
Wasn't he wearing sunglasses?
Yes.
So you couldn't really see his eyes if his eyes were covered by sunglasses, right?
His sunglasses were not very dark. They were more of a brownish tint.
He says dark.
Lights from my squad car filled his eye socket. You could see the outline of where his pupil was. See a slow reaction.
Did Mr. Koski ever at any time in your presence that evening remove the sunglasses?
He did not.
So based upon that information, what did you plan to do next in terms of how you were handling the incident?
Based on the initial call that came in, I requested an additional unit assist me in this, as at this time I was in contact with Mr. Koski and knew the clues and indicators that I had. He was impaired that I could not leave him. That situation needed to be dealt with at that time. So I was waiting for an additional unit for one of two reasons. The first being safety, as there's a protocol from the Minocqua Police Department that when we do field sobriety on an individual or we test somebody for their field sobriety, that a second officer is there for scene safety. And also we needed an additional officer to continue on to the original call, the 911 open line.
So you made this call for the backup officer to come and do that observation shortly after you arrived?
I believe it was within a minute.
And so you were waiting for that officer to arrive in order to ask for field sobriety test?
Yes, that's right.
Approximately how long did it take until another officer arrived?
I believe it was 27 minutes, around there, 25 to 29 minutes.
Okay, and officer, when Officer Shiklinski arrived from the Woodward Police Department, what did you do?
I asked Mr. Koski again if he had submitted to standardized field sobriety testing. He stated he would not, which I deemed as a refusal, and he was advised he was being placed under arrest for operating under the influence.
So did you tell him that he was placed under arrest at that time?
Yes, I did.
And what did you do then?
He was then placed in handcuffs. I searched his person, collecting all of his pocket contents, made sure my handcuffs were double locked, and I placed him in the rear of my secure area for squad.
Okay. Officer, in your report, it indicates that you made a reference to Mr. Koski at a couple of times, talking about a conflict of interest. What were you referring to?
From prior knowledge, I know that the contractor on my house, I was putting a bathroom in my basement, lived on Blue Jack Lake Road. To my knowledge, no other individuals lived on Blue Jack Lake Road. And also, I received two personal calls on my cell phone prior to the original call coming in from the contractor. The reason why is that the contractor knows that I work night shift, and I told him the best time to call me is going to be at midnight, between 11 and 1 a.m., but generally midnight, because that's going to be my noon for a normal individual.
So the name of the individual who owned the house that was being shown to the defendant and the real estate broker was Lester?
That is correct.
What is Lester's last name?
I would have to get the actual spelling. I'm not actually sure. I know him as Lester.
So for today's hearing, we'll refer to him as Lester.
Yes.
So as I understand your testimony, you received a call from Lester while you were en route to this, or was it before you left?
It was before I left, before the call came.
So that call that you received from Lester occurred well before 12:56.
Yes, I believe the first call came in at midnight, and the second call came in shortly after that.
And in that call, what was Lester calling you about?
The first call, Lester was calling me about a vanity for my basement, for my bathroom. He stated that he had a vanity from another property that he was looking at selling. And we spoke about that earlier at my house. He asked me if I could come see it. He stated that I could not. He says, well, stop by tomorrow, as he knew the next day I had off of work.
And so during that conversation, did Lester say anything about any other activities going on at his house at that evening?
He did not.
Now, as I understand your testimony, as you're driving out there between 1256 and 114, you get another call from Lester.
Negative. Lester called me prior to 1256.
Oh, so the second call was prior to?
The second call came in prior to 1256.
Well, when did that come in?
I would say in the time frame of 1210 to 1222, 1225, somewhere in there. It was within 10 to 15 minutes.
Okay. And what did Lester talk about at that time?
Lester indicated that some people were looking at his property, they've all been drinking, and he's requesting a subject to leave. At that time, I advised Lester to call the Panaco Police Department or call 911 and report it, not have that documented.
And did Lester acknowledge that he would do that?
Yes, he did.
So when you arrive on the scene at 1:15, how far is it from where Lester's house is to the intersection that you stopped the defendant's car?
It's
or where the defendant's car was parked?
It's over a few miles. I know from Pine Lake Road to Lester's house, it was roughly 3 miles from the intersection of Pine Lake Road to Jack Lake Road to Lester's house. That's what I've been told.
And how would you describe the development of that 3 mile stretch of road?
It's undeveloped, it's not blacktopped, it's not maintained by the town, it's maintained by Lester and a skid steer. They plow the snow with, or pave the driveway.
So when you got.
What's that? Where'd that come from? How do you know that?
Did I know Lester?
Lester. How long did Lester?
Last
night.
We had a conversation about
what's his last name.
I guess the background information. I have a quote tractor that I plowed my driveway with, and he asked how it was. As he lives on Jack Bay Road, and I told him I didn't know anybody lived on Jack Bay Road. And he asked how I asked him how who maintains that road, because I know the town supervisor that I know that's not a non-maintained road.
Had you ever been to Lester's house before?
I've been to Lester's house once prior.
So when Mr. Koski started talking to you out at the site, and he was talking about things that were weird, what was he trying to, what did you understand that he was trying to get you to do?
I believe he was trying to have me leave that scene and go to Lester's house.
And why is it that you didn't go to Lester's house?
I had indicators of impairment that from Koski, I did not feel safe. Not only one leaving Koski, but I didn't feel safe if there was a disturbance going on, going into an area of Panaqua that I know has poor radio service on my portable radio. It's not a safe location to go. In protocol, Panaqua Police Department, if you go to a disturbance of more than one person, a backup officer needs to be there for safety.
And is that requirement of the backup officer observing the field sobriety testing, is that a requirement of the Panaqua Police Department?
Yes, it is.
And has that been your practice, if that's how you've done it on all the years you've worked at the PD?
Yes, it is.
Prior to administering field sobriety tests to Mr. Koski, did you feel as though you had enough information to charge him with OWI, or did you want to have the field sobriety test?
I had many indicators of impairment at that time. It's protocol that we request somebody submit to standardized field sobriety testing. But at that time, I had the information necessary in order to place Mr. Koski under arrest for operating.
And so you didn't want to put him in the car and drive to this other scene because you wanted to complete your investigation of the crime that you just observed, which was operating under the influence.
That is correct. Is it also a safety issue
Please speak closer to the mic.
It's a safety concern if I detain Mr. Koski and place him in the rear of my squad and took him to an unknown location with unknown circumstances. That's not something that we do in law enforcement.
And as I understand your thought process at night, you wanted to and were willing to administer field sobriety tests to him.
That's correct.
But he refused.
That's correct.
And it wasn't until he refused that you felt that you had sufficient reasonable justification to enact the arrest, correct?
I had sufficient evidence to that point. He refused that. Mr. Koski made that decision on his own cognizance. I had my decision made to that point.
You understand that if you had taken him into the car before you'd asked him to do field sobriety tests, he would have been effectively taken into custody.
If I would have taken him into custody, placed him in the rear of my squad car secure, and continued on a separate investigation, he would have been illegally seized, which would be a violation of his civil liberties.
Now, officer, approximately, as I understand, it was about 1:43 or so that he was arrested.
That's correct.
And then approximately when did you leave to take him back to the hospital?
Around 2:20 a.m.
And what were you doing between that 1:43 and 2:20?
I was completing the paperwork on our MVC or mobile data computer within our squad car. That's consistent with traffic-related offense for operating.
When Mr. Koski was talking to you and telling you about what was weird at that house, did you initiate any action to try and get some investigators out there?
Yes, I did. I immediately requested an additional unit to come. I requested Pilots County and Price County. Price County wasn't able to send somebody. Pilots County was sending a unit from Flambeau. And Oneida County heard the radio traffic and were sending a unit as well.
And did officers then arrive at the scene?
They did arrive at the scene at which I was at which time I briefed them the information I had, and they went and completed an investigation at the residence.
Did you provide them information about what you knew about what was happening?
All the information I had at that point I provided them.
And approximately how much time was that, officer, between the time of the arrest and the time that those other officers got there?
At 1:14, and the officers arrived somewhere around that 2:20 mark, so a little over an hour.
So then you proceed to go to the Flambeau Police Department?
That is correct.
Upon arrival there, what did you do?
Once I arrived at the Flambeau Police Department, parked in the parking lot, I issued Mr. Koski the operating the influence citation, and proceeded to read them, informing the accused. I asked if he would consent to a chemical test of his breath, which is consistent with the Monaco Police Department's first defense policy.
Your Honor, I guess at this point I don't object to this testimony, but I would reserve the opportunity to cross-examine at a later time based upon the fact that we're having a refusal hearing at a later date.
Do we need to take up the refusal right now, then?
I'm sorry.
Okay, we can get through this in 2 minutes, is what I'm thinking. Can you get through this in 2 minutes?
Yes.
Okay.
showing you what's been marked exhibit two for identification, identified as informant of the accused. Do you recognize that document?
Yes, I do.
What is it?
After an individual's issued informing the accused or operating under the influence citation, they are subsequently issued informing the accused. It is read verbatim. They are asked what their response is, either yes or no. When they're asked, will they submit to an evidentiary chemical test of their breath? Mr. Koski stated he would not complete this test. It was documented on 6/11/20 at 3 a.m.
And what time was that signed by you?
It was signed at 3 a.m.
Is that the document that you read to defendant Mr. Koski?
Yes, it is.
I move that exhibit 2 be admitted.
Again, Your Honor, I guess I would just review the point I made earlier about conducting the hearing at a later date.
We'll receive the exhibits, and he'll probably be at the next hearing no matter what. So, just so it's in the record.
And then after that, did you give him plaintiff's exhibit 1?
Yes, I did. Both replaced his jail evidence when he was taken to the Oneida County Jail.
How did you determine, you may have said it, I didn't hear it, but how did you determine that he had refused?
I asked Mr. Koski what his answer was, yes or no. When I asked him, will he submit to an entry chemical test of his breath, there's no response. I proceeded to ask 4 more times. Each time he did not respond and continued to talk, at which time I deemed it as a refusal.
Okay, I move that that document be entered into evidence, Your Honor.
It'll be received.
Exhibit 2.
Yes.
Okay, I have no further questions at this time.
He's holding.
And is it your testimony today that the first call that came in to dispatch was from the owner of the residence, Lex McZuga, who you know as Lester?
I'm not sure at that time the first call came in.
Okay, because you also were later made aware of the fact that Mr. Koski himself was making calls to 911 dispatch, true?
That is correct.
And you also know that several of the calls did not go through to dispatch because of the lack of service, right?
At a later time, I did find that out, yes.
It's your testimony on direct examination that you received 2 calls on your personal cell phone from Lester. Is that right, 2 calls?
Yep.
When was the one about the vanity that Lester made to you?
Roughly midnight.
You have to get close to that microphone.
Sorry. It was roughly midnight.
And then the second call was concerning Mr. Koski and this situation?
The second call was concerning somebody. There was no direct specific name being presented.
Did you have the opportunity to review Deputy Williams of the Oneida County Sheriff's Department's report on this incident?
I did, ma'am.
Did you tell Mr. McZuga that you would take care of the situation?
Negative, ma'am.
So when were you officially dispatched to the Bootjack Lake Road location then?
I believe it was 12:56 is when I was en route to the call on Bootjack Lake Road and Pine Lake Road.
So at that point, did you know already that there was a conflict of interest? Because you had already received the personal calls?
I was not sure at that time. I believe on my way out there that there may be a conflict of interest, but I was unsure of what was going on at that time.
Is there anything in the Monaco Police Department, employee handbook, about conflicts of interest?
Sergeant Tate, as he was already, his duty was done for the evening, his service.
When you arrived at the scene, it was your testimony, was it not? And it's also included in the police report that Mr. Koski was on his cell phone with dispatch at the time you were pulling up, right?
He was on the phone with somebody, yes, ma'am.
But your testimony is also that his diesel truck was so loud that you couldn't really hear the two of you interact, so that you therefore needed to turn off the vehicle, true?
That is true.
You are also testifying here today that you specifically asked Mr. Koski himself to move his vehicle. Is that true?
Yes, ma'am.
Why isn't that on the body camera recording?
Because I was still in my vehicle and I requested him to do that.
So if we have 911 calls from dispatch that correspond to the call that Mr. Koski has when he's standing on scene and that's captured on your body cam, wouldn't we also then see when you're asking him to back the vehicle up, or are there two body cameras?
Negative. Can I explain why? So as I'm coming around this left-hand turn, I observe Mr. Koski's vehicle in the middle of the roadway. At this time, our computer system with the Monaco Police Department in our squad car drops a pin where my 911 call comes from. That pin is not exactly geolocated. Gives you a proximity. I did not know if he was the caller or not. So as I pulled up next to his vehicle, I could hear him on the line with our dispatch, Ms. Weber, at which time I told him to pull over to the side of the road. And I backed up my squad car. As soon as I exited my squad car was when my body camera would have been activated. It doesn't get activated prior. It's manually activated by myself.
So it is your testimony that you yourself also backed up your squad? You parked and then backed it up out of the center of the roadway?
Negative. I pulled up next to him and I backed up my, so I stopped.
Did you interact with him when you stopped, or did you just stop and then back up your vehicle?
No, I interacted with him from my window to his window, as he was in the driver's seat of his vehicle. So we're pulling up like this opposite direction.
Your testimony is when you first had contact with Mr. Koski, he was in the driver's seat of his vehicle?
Yes, ma'am.
So you said on direct examination that you didn't know exactly why you were headed to this location, you didn't know who you would be having contact with, and you had no knowledge of any kind of intoxication or anything of any kind, right?
As I was heading to the location, I did not know, other than Lester, who I'd be potentially dealing with.
Did Lester tell you that everyone had been drinking? When you had contact initially with Mr. Koski, you already discussed the fact that he left his door open. Was it his overall demeanor that he believed you were going to go somewhere then? Go back to the residence? He asked you to go with him back to the residence?
That conversation had not been made at that point. I just simply requested him to exit his vehicle. There's never a conversation of what was going to happen. My request is that had information at this point, I'm requesting him. I asked Mr. Koski to step out of his vehicle, at which time he stepped out and left the door open.
And I think you testified that you interacted with Mr. Koski for about a half hour, or that it took backup about a half hour to respond. How many times do you think that Mr. also indicated when you initially had contact with Mr. Koski that the residence was just up the road, is that right?
Yes, on Blue Jack Lake Road.
So it's, I don't think it's a disputed fact that Mr. Koski's purpose for contacting law enforcement and for having contact with you was to elicit help for his realtor, right?
At this point, if I received contact from Lester via a cell phone, which is the cell phone number I have, and a second 911 call came in, I have reason to believe that it may be Lester. It does not say in our call sheet on our MPC who calls on my side. So when a second 911 call came in, as I'm heading out there, and Mr. Koski is on the phone, his cell phone, as you described, he received signal there. I believe that he could have called from the location in which he started from if Lester also had cell service there, is my train of thought.
Didn't you have a discussion about the fact that you knew that Lester was selling his property and Mr. Koski left his realtor back in a residence?
We had a conversation that he was selling his property.
And you already testified that you know that nobody else really lives out at Blue Jack Lane, right?
That's what I believe. I thought Lester was the only person that lived on that road.
There was this discussion about field sobriety tests, and as your interaction evolved, obviously there was a more strained interaction between you and Mr. Koski. Did Mr. Koski tell you that he would do field sobriety in his own due time when another backup officer got there?
I believe he did.
But in fact, when Officer Klopinski arrived of the Woodruff PD, you placed Mr. Koski under arrest, correct?
Negative.
It's your testimony that you did not place Mr. Koski under arrest when Officer Klopinski arrived?
When Officer Klopinski arrived, I asked Mr. Koski if he would submit to standardized field sobriety testing. He refused at that time. He was placed under arrest.
You testified that it's...
Sorry, just for clarification.
Is it Monaco Police Department policy that you would wait for backup from your own department when you conduct field sobriety, or can it be backup from any department?
Any police department for scene safety purposes.
Mr. Koski does ask you directly, does he not, if you can recall, what set of facts you were basing your belief that he was intoxicated on, didn't he?
I believe he did.
And what was your response to that?
I believe I gave him signs and symptoms of impairment, which he showed at that time.
That was after the arrest?
And that was prior to the arrest.
After he was arrested and you were put in the squad, did he ask you why are you placing him under arrest? What did you see?
Yes, he did. I believe I did.
Is that recorded?
But yeah, it should be on my body cam, sir.
Do you have any redirect?
During your conversation, first of all, Your Honor, I assume that as a result of the last hearing that the court received all the videotapes and the court was able to see those or will be able to pursuant to stipulation.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
I observed a jump drive provided by counsel, and as best I could get it off the, there was a lot of other things on there, but I saw a body cam and I saw some dash cam.
So during the time when you were out on the road with Mr. Koski, did he mention several times that he had been drinking that evening?
Yes, he did.
Just one more time, explain the safety concern that you have when you d- which requires you to have a second officer observe field sobriety tests.
That's an Aqua Police Department protocol that will, on any impaired driver, when you're going to be doing field sobriety, that a secondary officer is there for safety in order to keep an eye on not only the vehicle, but also traffic that may be on the roadway, as well as the individual in which you're conducting field sobriety on, as you're focused on very small attributes of an individual during certain parts of the field sobriety testing.
Officer, in your years of experience, have you ever had occasion to have a person who's been investigated for OWI give you misinformation about something?
Yes, I have.
So, did you completely believe what he was saying about what was going on in this other house?
I took it into consideration at that time, but my sole investigation was on Mr. Koski at this time. He was the first individual I had contact with.
And Lester, when he called you those two times, did he call you from a cell phone?
He called me from his cell phone number that I have on my personal cell phone.
Okay. And that was from the house where he was located?
That's what I believed, yes.
No further questions.
What did he tell you on that second phone call?
He told me that people were at his house and he asked the individual to leave. At that time, I immediately told him to call the Monaco Police Department or 911 and get that documented. That was the extent of our conversation. Practice for me, a law enforcement officer, for the past 6 years that I don't take calls via my personal cell phone that will be documented.
No further questions, Your Honor.
Said he never removed his glasses. Did you ever ask him to?
Not at that time. Later in our conversation, he advised me that they were prescription glasses, which is why he had them on.
But in the 30 minutes if you were with him out in the seat, you never asked him to remove them?
No, I did not.
So it's not odd that he had them on?
I guess I don't wear sunglasses at night. It's tough to see. But during field sobriety, one of the precursors during the HGN as you request to take glasses off and they're removed and held in hand.
You never got that far?
No, I did not.
So when did you ever wear prescription glasses?
After he was arrested. When I was holding up informing the accused paperwork to my rear divider window, and he said he needed to bring it closer as his glasses were down. this point, I did not know that was the first one. Dispatch informed me of that. And still, I always print everything off my card. And as you're down on Pine Lake Road, our squad cars have a tough time receiving cell phone, and our squad cars have a tough time receiving internet service. So at which time I was having trouble, which is why the paperwork took so long to complete. And when I returned to the police department, I was able to print everything off.
And when you got to Koski in the middle of the road, in essence, you knew that was the person who was calling?
I had information to believe. I believe that's potentially who was calling.
Did you pass a car on the way?
I did not.
And during the 30 minutes, I didn't see any vehicles go by?
I did not. So every time
I didn't see any vehicles go by you on the video.
Yeah, but I had reason to believe that he was involved after that. But like I said earlier, our squad cars, when they drop a pin for the 911 call, it's not an exact location. It's very, very close, but it could be anywhere from a quarter mile to 10 feet. You never know, especially down there.
When you first pulled up, you're in your squad and he's in his truck.
Yes.
And you pulled up driver window to driver window.
Driver window to driver window, yes, sir.
All right. And that discussion was through open windows?
Through open window.
And what was that discussion?
I asked what was going on. He said he just left the residence. At what time I asked him to back his vehicle up, as I believed. Now I confirm that he was involved with what was potentially going on at the residence.
Okay. And then you backed your vehicle?
I backed my vehicle up as we were on a corner and wanted to make sure that if somebody was coming around, they'd be able to see.
Out of your squad and asked him to get out of his vehicle?
Yes, that's correct.
What was weird about leaving the door open?
Generally, when people get out of their vehicle, they don't leave the door open. I get out of my truck, I get out of my squad car, I shut the door. It's just natural for people to do that.
In custody. And you didn't want to put him in the back of your squad to go up to the residence for safety reasons.
But he was not in custody at that time. To that point, I had reasonable suspicion that he was drinking, but I did not feel safe putting somebody in the rear vehicle of my squad secured to go to an unknown residence where I had unknown danger.
Residence, right?
It was a known that was Lester's residence, but it was an unknown what I was going into. He asked him to leave.
Have you ever put like in foul weather, like with officers sometimes, not to refuse to test at the scene, but actually put him in the back of the squad before he even
believe somebody...
Was Patrick sleeping on the couch at midnight?
Yeah, I do believe that is odd, but I also don't think it's odd that if somebody's drinking, that it would be wise to tell them to get in the vehicle and have them leave. I'm not going to tell somebody to leave if they're drinking since they put somebody else at danger.
Indicated that he was either intoxicated or on a substance.
That is correct.
Based on your
training experience.
And your training in drug detection, correct?
That is correct.
So what drug would he have been on?
An antidepressant. Or a CNS depressant is what the correct term would be.
And that's just from observation?
That is correct.
You don't need to do anything else other than watch them? No series of tests?
There are a series of tests that would be a drug evaluation classification to complete the full DRE evaluation. But at that time, you do what is called an initial observation. And you look for immediate signs and symptoms.
When did you make the decision that he was under the influence of a controlled substance?
After I, one, observed him get out of the vehicle, he had an unsteady walk. Two, I had the odor of intoxicants emitting from him. Three, I had physical verbal impairment based on the slow, thick slurred speech, which is consistent with somebody that would be impaired by alcohol at the time.
What about the drugs?
At that time, certainly the initial is just the initial of what I see. After that, so what I can do is I can go through and I can have a full DRE evaluation. So it's a series of tests, if you're familiar with it. It's consistent with asking verbal questions, having them do the full field sobriety, they do modified Romberg, fingers and nose, and take their pulse at three different times.
But you didn't do any of those regarding drug recognition?
I did not.
But you drew the conclusion that he was potentially under the influence of a drug or something?
But he was under the influence of alcohol, which is considered CNS depressant.
So you were talking about other drugs, you're talking about alcohol.
That is correct. But I had information to believe that he was impaired on something. And so I take the totality of information which I collected through our contact that he was impaired.
So alcohol is an antidepressant?
It's a depressant. It would fall, I believe, into the antidepressant category. Just go to the and goofy to think about, sorry.
So within minutes of talking to Koski, you could have placed him under arrest right there, correct?
I could have placed him.
Why didn't you?
Safety concern.
Would it be safe to handcuff him and put him in the back of the squad car?
At that time, I didn't believe so. If Koski would have made any flight movement, would have attempted to fight me.
Last thing you wanted to do on the video is take off.
That wasn't that. But as you're indicating, within the first few minutes, that wasn't. I had no idea. I need more time in order to gauge that. I can't just come up to somebody. Hey, you've been drinking. Are you gonna run? Are you gonna fight? Are you gonna wanna try to mislead? I have to take my investigation, develop it the best I can. I felt it safe.
Did you make any threatening moves to you in 30 minutes of discussion?
No, I did not.
So,
safety concern.
When you ask for field sobriety tests, would you consider that, under the whole circumstances, the investigation would go dry, costs would not be a conflict? If you are biased, for instance, against and for Lester,
investigating the OWI for task.
Well, you got a call from your contractor acquaintance from a house that you've been to on one prior occasion and said they were drinking and the guy didn't want to leave the house.
I guess my bias for Lester would be that if I had to take
killed by Rusty Koski?
No.
Why not? Well, why would you think the other way?
Because it's a direct affection of that individual. It's directly affecting Lester if I arrest Lester. So if Lester gets bailed out, comes back to work on my house the very next day and says, oh, it was $2,000, now it's $6,000 because you arrested me last night. I believe that's a direct reflection of what occurred.
Do you have any questions regarding that, I guess, Mr. Carroll?
No, Your Honor.
And Ms. Hogan?
Thank you. May I have a seat, clerk? Can you please state your name for the record?
Jim Kosky.
And will you please spell your last name for us?
K-O-S-K-I.
Mr. Kosky, where do you reside?
New Lenox, Illinois.
And you were in Oneida County on June 11th of 2020?
That's correct.
And why were you in Oneida County?
I was looking to purchase a home, looking at a lot of homes just to buy.
And so how did you meet Bonnie Burns?
Basically through all the listings I was looking at, there's houses in Presque Isle, all over the Northwoods area, and I contacted her because that's how I needed to get somebody to show me property.
And obviously one of the properties that you went to see was on the Jack Lane, correct?
That's correct.
And that was owned by a gentleman named Black Mizuka, true?
That's correct.
I'm going to try and consolidate what happened at the residence, and initially I'm just going to move to when you had to leave the residence. What were the circumstances surrounding that? Why did you have to leave the residence?
Because I was requested by the homeowner that I had to get out of there.
What was going on when he told you that? What did you see?
Basically, I'm not sure about what part you want to hear. What happened transpired for him to tell me to leave was that something happened with my realtor. She was unable to walk, and I seen him carrying her into the home. And I was following, and then he took her up the stairs and later on the bed. And at that point, I didn't like the situation that was happening. I knew something was wrong. Why is he taking her upstairs? And I just went ahead and tried waking, moving, assisting her to say, Bonnie, we gotta go, let's go. And that was her name. And at that time, he grabbed me, turned me, and he says, you get out or you go. He had broken English, he's Polish. And so I didn't know if he meant out of the house, out of the room, but when I seen his anger, I just went ahead and knew this was wrong. He wasn't going to allow me to take Bonnie with. And I left, went outside, and basically went ahead and I was afraid because of his demeanor. And I hid it off to the side of the house in the dark. He came out. I seen him coming right at the doorway, and he's looking for me, but I was in the dark, probably 15, 20 feet from him. And as soon as he turned around, he went right back in the house, and I took off and went to my truck.
Did you try to call 911?
Yeah, my phone was in my truck. It was there the whole evening from the time we arrived there at approximately 6:45 p.m.
So you get to your truck, you get your phone. How many times do you try to get through to 911?
As soon as I got to my truck, I started up the truck, it was dark, and I didn't have my glasses, so I reached up in my overhead, and that's the only pair of prescription glasses I had. I misplaced them, left them back at the residence somewhere, so I found my dark sunglasses, those are my fishing glasses, so I could tie hooks and everything. But the long story short, I got in the truck and just immediately started it up, and I was leaving the property. I picked up my phone, and I knew we didn't have reception, but I thought I'd keep trying. And as I was driving out, I must have called 911 at least 6-7 times, and at times, every time I thought I was talking to him. And so I'm talking, 911, what's your emergency? And I thought they were hearing me. And finally I started saying, and it would disconnect, disconnect, disconnect. So as I'm leaving the property, and which is, I think the driveway is probably 2.5 miles long way back in there. It took a long distance to get out to the road. So I just continued, and finally, as soon as I got reception, and they finally heard me, I stopped. I pulled over the side of the road immediately and just stopped right there.
Did your vehicle ever move from that location when you contacted and got through to 911?
No, never. I stopped because I didn't want to lose reception, and that was all I cared about, was getting in touch with someone.
Okay. And what time did you have contact then with law enforcement?
It was approximately, well, as soon as I got on that with 911, I'm in conversation with them, and they said the police officer's on the way, and I said, oh, there's one right there, one right here right now. The same moment I was on with 911, he pulls up right next to me, and I'm in the same position that I came over, pulled off to the side of the road, and I stayed on the road before he arrived there, because I just figured I'll get pulled up to the side of the road, and there was a reason why I kind of backed up at an angle, and what he was trying to say.
Okay, I'm going to stop you there.
Sure.
So, did you later on, after this arrest, have the opportunity to review the body camera of Officer Punzel of this occasion?
Yes.
Did you have the opportunity to review his police report?
Yes, I did.
Did you have the opportunity to review Officer Shapinski's body cam from the Woodard Police Department?
Yes, I did.
And did you also have the opportunity to review the 911 dispatch calls that came in surrounding this incident?
Yes, I did.
Did you have an occasion to prepare any piece of demonstrative evidence incorporating that information?
Yes, I did.
What did you do and how did you do that, briefly?
Basically, it was just a PowerPoint that shows the footage of discrepancies in his police report, just to make a short version of everything that transpired that night.
For the record, I was never able to get it opened.
I did, I'm sorry?
I couldn't get it open either.
Your assistant called me this morning and said she could open it.
She did? Okay. She didn't tell me that.
I'm not sure if I have to do it in my share screen.
Jim, you had the opportunity to review the dispatch log, and you married it with Officer Ponzel's body cam. What did that reflect to you? What were you able to see on Officer Ponzel's body cam when he first arrived?
I was talking to 911 when he pulled up. You can hear from his body cam that I was on with 911. They were talking to me. I asked them, wait a minute. And then I yelled over to Officer Ponzel, that was parked right next to me when he pulled up. I'm on with 911 now. And then it was like a three-way conversation showed all of us there together when he pulled up next to me, where I have been just minutes and might never move my truck at that point on.
And so you can hear clearly on the dispatch that you're saying, oh, here he comes, and you can also hear it on the body cam, right?
Yes.
And Officer Schlepinski, he, on his body cam, Officer Ponzel indicates to him that you were backed into the ditch. Is that true?
On Officer Schlepinski's body cam footage, Ponzel stated to Officer Schlepinski, when I came pulling up, this guy is off to the side of the road in the ditch.
And again, it's your testimony that you never moved your truck after that point where you backed up and contacted 911.
Never.
And you also explained that to Officer Ponzel in some detail later on, didn't you?
Yes, there was a footage of it that I said that when I left, I pulled over to the side of the road safely to stay out of the way of any traffic. And back there, probably nobody in 2 weeks would pass me, maybe the homeowner.
Okay, so again, you drove only so far as necessary to get through to 911.
Correct.
But how far were you from the residence, do you think?
The driveway, it goes back there, winds and turns, so I think his driveway is probably a couple, up 2.5-3 miles, and then as soon as I got out of the driveway, within, I don't know, just got on the pavement, because I just threw a water bottle to mark my location, because everybody was getting lost, even all the police were getting lost, everybody was in the way of that property, we were getting lost, so it was difficult to get back in there.
And there was this discussion about your doors being open then when you had contact with Ponzel.
Yes.
Can you describe that, or why would you have left your door open?
Well, I didn't. I mean, I stepped out. I know what he said. I stepped out on my own, and the video showed that I stepped out to get my license out and approach him on my own. He never asked me to get out. I presented my driver's license to him. He opened up my rear door and asked me to sit there. So I walked around to the open rear door that he opened, and I just stayed right there. And then he walked around and took my keys and shut the truck off, and then he took my keys with him immediately.
And when you had this initial contact, it was your subjective belief that you were going to go to the residence and help was on the way, right?
Yeah, I was assuming that because I'm calling 911 up there, we're talking with them. That's what I was desperate. I was like panicked to say, we got to get in there, And I'm assuming that's what we were going to do.
Was it your intention the entire time, or the hour that you had contact with law enforcement, that you were going to try and get help for Bonnie?
That was my only objective. That I was forced to leave. I had no other option. I felt like, okay, can't get in conflict with this person. I'm disabled for one, and I can't, I have to avoid conflict. And I just knew, I felt threatened and I had to leave. I was told to.
And to that, did you have any difficulty, or do you have any difficulty getting in and out of your vehicle?
Yes, even getting up and walking from a chair to getting in and out of my truck, sitting too long. I had a bad fall. I had a lot of injuries. And to this day, I have limps and weakened legs and some nerve damage going down my leg. I walk with a limp. I can't run. I can't do sports.
Okay. So when Officer Punzel does ask you to conduct field sobriety testing, what do you tell him?
I was waiting on the other officer. You know, he asked if I would submit to field sobriety testing. And because of the mistrust with him, I says, no, not with you, but yes, when other officers are arriving. He stated in the PowerPoint would show that, and he immediately says, fine, if you feel better with the other officers, we'll wait for them to arrive.
And then when the officer arrived, and you also had the opportunity to review Brian Shapinski's body cam, did he ask you again to do field sobriety then?
No, nobody does. Nobody did. I was anticipating Officer Shapinski. I was waiting in anticipation for him. That's what I was waiting for, more help. I called 911 like many times back because I had mistrust with this officer total. So I was pleading with 911 to send other officers to the scene, please. And I called multiple times and they have all recordings.
Did you ever ask Officer Punzel if you could just get in his squad and go with him to the residence?
Yes. I said, well, as soon as he got back from backing up his car into the side of the road ditch, almost like me, when he came back, I went ahead and says, let's go. And that's when, basically at that point in time, and he says, you're not going nowhere. And I said, well, I'm going. He goes, no, you're not going nowhere. I got your keys. And I was like, well, let me go with you. Let's go. I'll jump in the back. And he goes, no, we're not going nowhere.
And then during the course of the pendency of this case and your opportunity to review Shapinski's body camera, can you just briefly detail the nature of the conversation that Punzel has with Shapinski when he arrives?
Can you clarify? Was I already in the car?
No. Well, you may have been in the squad, but does he describe the nature of the conflict of interest to Brian Shapinski at all?
Yes, in that body cam footage of Shapinski, he made statements. Officer Punzel made statements saying that I know that guy, which he's Matt Lester. He's a contractor at my house. I'm just remembering all the statements of what that was in. He's tough. He says, I don't care what happens in with this. I just want my basement or bathroom finished. And let me think.
Did you were able to capture that in the PowerPoint presentation?
Yes. Yeah, everything. Quite a few statements about he knows him. He was at my house last week. All I care about is his basement getting finished.
So is there any, really briefly,
I believe that because the calls were made, and I found out right away that there was calls made to Officer Punzel, and I was so shocked that, oh, a police officer is here right now. How did he get out here? I'm calling 911. So it was very shocking to me, but I was happy to see an officer. I was so pleased. I couldn't believe that, oh, he's here right now. But the problem with it was things turned immediately south, and he says, Officer Punzel stated to me, well, I can't go in there, and it's a conflict of interest or something to me. But then he started saying all kinds of private information. Well, you had problems with him being married, and I was like, and I stopped, and I looked, how do you know this? Well, now I knew he was talking to him, and then I was afraid.
And this caused you to be panicked, right?
No, I was panicked immediately. I said as immediately as he came up to me, I was like, we have to get in there. My realtor's in there, please. We have to go in there. And he goes, why? What's the problem? What's the problem? I just, and I didn't know how to explain it. I didn't want to accuse anybody of doing something, like the homeowner, but I felt that's why I left. I felt that this was not a good situation. And I said I was scared for her life. I was panicked. I was right away. That was my only motive, was to go get help. And I didn't drive. Barely out of this driveway, and I got reception. I pulled over and I stopped right then, and I was just happy to see an officer. But then things changed very quick.
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Any cross?
Yes. So that night at the house, when you were there looking for a piece of property to buy, you consumed two beers and three or four straight shots of some kind of liquor?
Yes, that's correct.
And so isn't it true that your ability to make observations under that form of impairment would have been far greater and less clear than Officer Punzel, who was out there on duty that night?
Can you clarify your question?
You were impaired by the alcohol you drank, right?
Well, the time that we were, I was with Officer Punzel when he arrived, that was approximately 1:04 a.m. Not 1:14 that he said, but anyway, my first beer that was ever offered there was approximately 7:30 p.m. and I only drank two. And the next one was approximately 8:30, an hour later, and I recall the best, it was, I barely drank, so we didn't have nothing else offered, no water, so I just thought it was being gracious. So 7:30, 8:30, and then approximately about 9 o'clock, that was 9:30, that the beer was finished.
9 or 9:30 is when you started drinking the straight shots, right?
I would say.
Your Honor, this isn't an OWI trial.
Yeah, I would probably approximately say it was between 9:30 and the latest I remember anything at that point was probably only 10:30. So it was earlier that we, you know, it was that we stopped and that I did.
And do you remember looking at the video that was video on Officer Punzel's body cam saying directly to him, we got drunk?
You know, I wasn't going to deny anything because I was in a panic and I couldn't understand that he did have like an impairment of something, and I couldn't believe at that point in time. All I cared about was a police officer coming to get help, and at that point in time, I was glad that I didn't have to drive down no main roads or anything, and I barely got out of the driveway, and yes, I had no other choice. What were my options when I was being forced? forced out. I had to go and I stopped outside. I didn't drive down the road. I stopped where I was, and that's about it.
You testified in direct that you watched the contents of the officer's body cam of what happened that night, right?
Correct.
And don't you remember, I saw it on the camera, you said we got drunk. You said that right on the camera.
Your Honor, asked and answered.
No, he's not answered.
You're looking, yeah.
Did you see that on the...
Yes, I did. I says, I guess we got drunk. But I didn't understand why it was feeling the way it did. It was unexplained, but yes, I said that. I wasn't denying it. I was just glad to see an officer come there. And I wasn't trying to hide nothing other than because I knew. But I was forced to leave. I had no other choices what I did. So I thought the safest thing to do, just keep calling 911, and then I stopped immediately, and I stayed there because I was afraid to lose reception.
Sir, is it your testimony that when the officer first arrived on the scene that you were not parked in the middle of the road?
Absolutely not.
And who backed the car into the ditch?
I parked that way purposely.
Three of the tires in the ditch out of four.
I wouldn't call that. I think the video or photos will reflect that's not true.
And is your testimony that the reason why you left the house was because the homeowner asked you to leave, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. And the homeowner is a much older gentleman than you, correct?
That's incorrect.
That's what?
Incorrect.
Okay, how old is he?
I don't know. How old is he?
So, were you afraid of your own safety from this gentleman who was there?
Your Honor, yes.
It was because I'm disabled. I cannot, if I get in any conflict, my doctor told me, my back will be fused. I have serious injuries. I'm disabled, and I avoid conflict.
And am I also understanding that you need prescription glasses to see?
Absolutely.
And you left that Lester's house that night with your glasses at his house?
Correct. So when I got in my truck, I didn't have no other, they weren't on my face. All I know is when I got my truck to drive, I needed my glasses and I grabbed my prescription sunglasses is all I had at that time. That's why they were on, so I can see, so I can drive.
So you could have gone in and gotten them before you left and used your regular, sir, could I finish? And use your regular glasses, right?
If at the time I could, but I was ushered out of there and had to leave. No choice to go find my glasses.
Isn't it true that you were asked to perform field sobriety tests by Officer Punzel when Officer Shaplinsky arrived and you refused to do so?
No.
That's on the tape too.
Yes, it is.
So you're saying you didn't refuse to take the field sobriety test?
I wasn't offered one by either officer.
Do you remember being asked many times what you meant by "it's fucking weird"? And you did not answer that question when the officer asked you many times?
If I recall, at some point in time, when I used the F-bomb in the video, I said, I can't believe what the F is going on. I don't believe this. I was in disbelief of not getting help when you call an officer to a scene.
So, you're at the house, you see this gentleman who is owner of the house and supposedly doesn't even hardly know the realtor. You both drink, she passes out, he carries her up the stairs, and you leave.
Your Honor, I think that's a mischaracterization of the testimony.
They opened the door, they brought in the testimony about that.
He testified to that on direct.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
How is it a mischaracterization?
That's not what Mr. Kosky testified to.
I don't specifically recall what he testified to regarding what he saw. Did you see him carry her up the stairs?
Yes.
And I guess Mr. Harrell's question is, why would you leave if you didn't raise a concern for you, right?
Yes, because he forced me to leave. He told me, you get out.
When did he tell you that? Before he's carrying her up or after?
After.
So he came back down and told you?
No,
I'm assuming upstairs? Was there an upstairs?
Yeah, he was carrying her upstairs, and I followed him upstairs. And when he put her down on the upstairs bed, at that point in time, I did not like that. I was like, why is he doing that? He could have kept her downstairs and put her on a couch. I didn't know why he was carrying her away to begin with. And so that's why I followed. Went back and followed to the house. I thought why is he carrying her? Followed up, then he's taking her upstairs. Then I started like, what is he doing? And then I went ahead and grabbed Bonnie and tried to, Bonnie, let's go, come on, we gotta get out of here, out of spirit. Well, what's this man doing? At that point in time, he grabbed, turned me, and he says, you get out of here. And then I seen the look at him on his face, and out of fear, I did not need to get an altercation, and that's when I went downstairs, went up to the side,
okay.
Fear,
okay.
Done.
Next question.
Okay, no further questions.
Do you need redirects?
Did you know where your glasses were?
No, not at the time. Well, I believe they were in the pavilion, but when I was ushered out that quick, I felt the fear. I had to get help quick, so I wasn't going to go walk around looking for my glasses. I thought they were on the top of my hat or my shirt when I'm looking for them. When I got them, they weren't there, so I didn't. All I did is just grab what I had in my truck at that time when I left.
I'm sorry, did you have a It was your testimony that Officer Puzzle did not offer you field sobriety test?
Yes, he offered it, but I just not with you.
Was that after Shaplinski or was that earlier?
Earlier.
Okay. After Shaplinski arrived, did Officer Puzzle offer you field sobriety test?
No. Approximately 5 or 5, 6 times.
And so you have the opportunity to review what actually happened on the scene, and a lot of your testimony is based upon your recollection and your review of the body cam.
Correct.
So you testified that Officer Punzel shared some information with you about how he knew Lester and the repairs on the house and all that, correct?
He did not. Yes. Okay. There's two different questions there. Yes, he did offer saying that he knew him.
He said he knew him.
Yeah.
He didn't talk about doing any repairs on the house or fixing, remodeling or anything like that, did he?
No, not with me.
Okay. Nothing further, Your Honor. I refer to the court's videos.
You can step out, sir. Thank you. Watch your step. I got a question for Officer Punzel here. I'll remind you, still under oath, you can stay there. Did you tell Shaplinsky that I just want my bathroom finished?
I do not recall, sir. I would have to review the body cam video.
You have not reviewed Shaplinsky's?
I have not.
If said, why would you have said that? I mean, you have a conflict. That's why you're not going to this emergency.
Correct.
So now you're telling Shaplinsky, I just want my bathroom finished. What would be the purpose of telling an officer that? If you have a conflict,
I believe, Your Honor, that's out of context. I believe he's working on my bathroom. He's completing work on my bathroom would be the conversation. It has no direct reflection of, I would tell him that I just want my bathroom finished. He asked, I believe I was explaining why there's a conflict of interest. I believe what I'm telling him is,
why did he need to know what the conflict was?
It's good information to know for another officer why you're not handling the call.
But you can understand by telling Officer Shaplinsky, I just want my bathroom finished, if those were the exact words. Aren't you really saying, I want my bathroom finished, so, you know, basically, don't do anything. Don't arrest him, or go in with a jaded eye.
Your Honor, I can't testify.
That's not why that would come up.
Your Honor, I can't testify that that's the exact words. If I had the exact documentation of what I said, which I don't believe that is what I said.
I don't have the exact words either right now, but that's only because of technical difficulties. Was that an exact quote, Ms. Hogan?
Yes, Your Honor.
And you testified that you offered field sobriety test after Shaplinsky got there?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Your Honor, I have to just ask, based upon our PowerPoint, one other idea would be, we have two computers that have it, so one could come to the court, the other could come to the counsel table so that you could review it, but I know that the court is pressed for time.
Also, we have to be scheduled for another period anyway, so finish up then. But I wouldn't mind seeing it beforehand as well. If you could convert it to some device that an old judge can.